This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Welcome to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Your host, Felice Gerwitz, is an author, a publisher, and your radio show host. She will encourage, educate, and inspire you with answers to your most pressing questions, from homeschool, marriage, parenting, and much more. Felice loves to equip moms to live a Christian life because every moment counts. Be sure to visit her website at mediaangels.com. And here's your host, Felice Gerwitz.
Hey, hi, and welcome to all of you who are joining me today. I'm excited about today's session because once a month I try to do a solo on Vintage Homeschool Moms where I am teaching on a particular topic. And today my topic is going to be on something that you may think is something that comes naturally to me because I am the owner of Media Angels, which is not only our sponsor, but my curriculum company. And I publish a lot of science materials. So you may think, oh, well, Felice has a science background or she really enjoys science. And today I hope to dispel some of those notions in that it doesn't come naturally to me, and yet the Lord has really opened my eyes to the wonderful world that He has created through science. So today, let me just give you a little bit about our sponsor, and that is my company, Media Angels. I have been a publisher for some years now. I started homeschooling and was really looking for some curriculum to teach on a creationist perspective and couldn't find anything. And then I started hearing people say, I'm putting my kids back in school because I don't want to teach high school science. And I thought, really? Why would you be afraid of that? It seemed like at the time the two things that were stumbling blocks for homeschooling K through 12 was sports and homeschool science classes. Well, now, we fast forward many years, and there are a lot of things such as co-ops, and we even have a co-op show on this radio network, as well as online curriculum. And so that doesn't seem to be as much of a stumbling block anymore. But I want to tell you, today we're going to talk about science labs, and I wrote a book called Teaching Science and Having Fun, and I have a special promotion code for you. I'm going to be giving you that in just a minute. And you can get that ebook for as little as $2.95. It's going to be $10 off of the download. So can you teach science? Yes, absolutely. You can have a homeschool science program at home for kindergarten all the way through grade 12. And how do I know this? Because I have done this. And I've done it not once, not twice, but currently in my fourth and fifth time with my youngest two children. So I have five kids. Three have graduated from homeschooling, and I'm currently schooling the last two. And so I know that it can be done, and I'm going to give you some tips quickly for you to learn how to do this at home, as well as, point you to some good resources that you can use. So let's start today with what is science? And there are lots of definitions out there with what science is. And, you know, let me just say to you that science has a lot of aspects, but it really, at its foundation, is exploration and using the scientific method, which we'll go over. So science contains exploring, researching, identifying, hypothesizing, and applying previously learned information. And so it really is a building block. I started with textbooks and workbooks and really grew my way into unit studies, incorporating science fairs, as well as using experimentation as a basis for our home education. And because of that, I have kids that are thinkers. They don't expect a book to give them all the answers, and if they can't find the answer, they look for the answers. And so I would like you to jot down what your definition of science is. and we'll just go from there. Five keys to successful science experimentation and labs in the home are really simple. The first is enthusiasm for the subject. If mom's saying, oh my gosh, I've got to teach science today, what do you think the kids are going to say? So that is important, having a good attitude, mom. And I'm not just talking about the kids here. We're talking about mom here. And just having that good, attitude that, yes, it can be done, and, yes, you will be the one doing it. So, remember, there's lots of resources out there. One of the things that I enjoy doing when I speak publicly is ask for a show of hands, and I ask for people who are, scientists, either with, someone who's a nurse perhaps or someone who is in the science field. And so what I do in that regard is ask you to look at people in your area. And maybe some of these people who have raised their hands in a live audience are people who live near you and they're your resources. Well, you can find all kinds of resources online now. And I don't want you to just go online. I want you to use local people and also work together in doing labs with local people if you can. We tend to do a lot of things solo at this point, but believe me, I've done all kinds of things as well as working within a co-op with science. Okay, so, wherever you are with that, number one is to be enthusiastic. The second is to understand the terminology and the application. Understanding the terminology is key to any subject. And when people say, well, you can't do science labs at home, I'll say something like, well, I think you can. And the reason for that is understanding the terminology. In order to understand what an atomic bomb is, you don't have to replicate that, do you? And that's usually one of the things that, I give it as an example. So understanding science means that you understand the terminology. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to replicate something in a science lab. Number three is the execution of the scientific method. And just quickly, let's go through the scientific method, which I know is down the line in this handout that I've given you. But let's talk about that. The scientific method is a procedure used to execute an experiment in an organized fashion. The point is to solve a problem or further investigate an observation. Now, one of the things that I think that a scientific method did was prove something was right or wrong. And that is not correct. And I think that that's where we fall short when we look at the scientific method. The scientific method just tells you whether or not your hypothesis was executed correctly, or even if you could, and let me rephrase that, because you have to be so careful in science. It's if your hypothesis was able to be verified in the conclusion. There, how's that for a cryptic answer? And the reason for that is the science doesn't prove or disprove, and that's why when you hear people say that the hypothesis of evolution is the Big Bang and that is a valid hypothesis, all that means is that somebody validated their hypothesis. It doesn't mean that evolution is correct or the Big Bang happened or that it is, as stated by the scientist. It just means that the scientist has formed a hypothesis, and it doesn't mean that he proved it. And I think we look at science as black and white. We look at science as if it's math. Now, with math, there is an equation, and 1 + 1 is always going to equal 2. Okay, and so we look at math and we say, that is a given and, that can't be tweaked. Can we get to that answer with many, many different ways. Yes, we can get to the answer number two. We can take three and subtract one and still get two. But with science, there is a lot more give and take. And for that reason, people tend to look at science and say, oh, I can't do it. Or my experiments never work. Have you ever said that? You know, tried to follow an experiment? Because we try to follow this like a recipe, don't we? And we know for sure in baking a cake, for example, that if we leave out some major ingredients, the cake isn't going to work. We can bake it, but it's not going to taste good. So we look at science experiments and we see all these steps and we think, well, if we follow these steps, we should have, you know, the same conclusion that the book is. And so that's why, you know, I say to parents, if your children, you know, if you want to start with some basic experiments, that's great. I have a lot of recommendations for, you know, experiment books that you can get at the local library. There's a whole series that Master Books puts out that is very good, Christian-based. And so you may want to look at some of those things and follow along with something that's tried and true. In fact, I've hosted quite a few different seminars in that vein, and one of them is at mediaangels.com/creationkids. And we have a step-by-step series of experiments done for you, with you. We encourage you to do them at home and then watch the video. And it's kind of hand-holding, if you will, to take you through how to do an experiment. However, I don't want you to miss the main point, and that is that science is experiential. And it is something that you can teach your children from early on, that even if an experiment doesn't work out as you planned, it's still a learning, it's still something that they can learn from. It's a learning experience. And so with that, I found that science allowed my kids to think. Now, my oldest, if you followed any of my background at all, it has severe learning disabilities. However, through science, he really had to think, and he had to work toward finding a solution. And I wasn't just going to give him the answers. And therefore, he grew, he grew extra, neurons in his brain to be able to cope with that. And Neil is very, very normal. He functions normally today. And I have to say, a lot of it, I believe, is through science and not giving him the answer and making him figure it out. And so if you're giving your children a textbook, you know, which I'm going to say we use textbooks in high school, but if you're just giving them the textbook and having them read it and not do any of the experiments or taking away, you know, the answer key for sure and not letting them work through it, then they're not going to be challenged. And we haven't really used a lot of logical thinking curriculum because science does it naturally and it does it within the context of a subject. And so because my kids have had to find the answer, and sometimes it's been difficult, they've been able to excel in logical thinking. So I just want to give you, you know, that testimony there. The fourth key to success is creating unusual opportunities and experiences, and with that, by that I mean, going on a lot of field trips if you can that are science-based. You know, obviously the hands-on science museums whenever you have that opportunity, and also giving the kids some experiences such as, you know, any type of a cooperative labs that you can. At one time locally, I hosted a series of hands-on days where the kids would come, and we would have tables set up where they would go from table to table with all of the things they needed to create different experiments. And so they were able to come for a full day and experience hands-on science. If you have that opportunity, or even create that within your area, you know, with a group of families, do that because it really is beneficial. Now, the fifth key to success may surprise you, and that is allowing input from your child. You know, a lot of times as homeschool moms, you know, we have our agenda, we want to get things done, and so we don't have a lot of time for input from our kids. But really, you know, listen to your children. I have just a really short example of this that I want to share with you. My second oldest child, Christina, and I, the one that I wrote the Truth Seekers Mystery Series with, my very precocious child, was doing a science fair project. And so for her third year of the same type of project, she was improving it each year as she went on in the scientific process. And so she'd started out with the basic stain remover, and by the third year, she was improving on the stain remover using a solution, peroxide. Now, by definition, peroxide is an unstable element. Now, how do we know this? Obviously, we did our research. I did not know this. You know, bought peroxide for years in the store. Never occurred to me, gosh, why do they sell it in a brown container? Have you ever thought of that? Well, that's because any kind of light or even opening the bottle of peroxide will greatly impact its shelf life. It's not going to be as potent. And also, they don't sell really strong peroxide, you know, unless you get a lab to order it for you, which we did for her third year of experiments, because it is very volatile. So my daughter decides she's going to try to stabilize an unstable element. And after trying to convince her that she could not do that, I finally said, okay, you know, thinking to myself, well, if you want to fail, go right ahead. And she basically said to me, which is why this is number five here, she said, Mom, in your science fair book, you say that we should have input from your, you know, from your children. And I thought, gosh, she read my book? But she did. And so she was giving her input. Well, I'll be darned if she didn't figure out a way to stabilize it. But it wasn't as far as the normal stabilization of something you probably use called OxyClean. Because if you look at OxyClean in its powdered format, that is one of its main active ingredients is hydrogen peroxide, which is exactly what we used, what Christina wanted to use in her experimentation. So I jokingly say if Christina had created OxyClean type of a product, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now. But that's why I say it's really important to allow input from your child because you never know what they're going to create. And so that was the last year of Christina's experimentation with peroxide. Of course, do I wish we had continued on? Yes, because at that time, that product did not exist in the store. So that's just an interesting aside there for you. So, you know, you just never know. But, you know, look at your science curriculum, look at what you're doing, and look at what your children are learning, and just see how that pans out with your goals for the year. You know, the scientific method, again, as I said, it doesn't prove anything. It just gives you that foundation that you need to create the experiment in an organized fashion. So you want to look at the steps of a scientific method, and I have that in my book just really quickly. It's the question, the research, the hypothesis or educated guess, the materials, the procedure, the experiment itself, observation and organization of data, and your conclusion. Well, we're going to break for a commercial, and when we come back, I'm going to discuss what makes a good science lab.
My name is Felice Gerwitz, and I want to introduce you to my publishing company, Media Angels. I have a heart for homeschool families, and since 1994, I have poured my efforts into creating curriculum to support teaching science, especially from a creationist worldview to the homeschool community. My curriculum was selected by Kathy Duffy in her 101 Top Homeschool Picks. Another labor of love is a three-book novel series specifically for homeschoolers with a creation focus, the Truth Seekers Mystery Series that I co-authored with my daughter, Christina. Media Angels represents uncompromising quality, not only with books, but with an online homeschool convention and this ultimate homeschool radio network with amazing show hosts. Along with books, Media Angels has produced an American history and an American government video series, as well as a family Bible study, Homeschooling with Proverbs. It has been my pleasure to mentor countless homeschool families and missionaries worldwide. I also enjoy mentoring aspiring authors with one-on-one coaching and the Information in a Nutshell series. If we haven't met, please reach out. I'd love to help you on your homeschooling journey, or if you have a book, help you getting that into print. I can be found on social media and look forward to meeting you. You can reach me at mediaangels.com. Thanks so much, and hope to meet you soon.
Hi, and welcome back. My name is Felice Gerwitz, and this is a session of Vintage Homeschool Moms. And I just want to share with you just one of the questions that came through on the chat room, and that is, the question states, so are you not recommending other curriculum that is textbook-based? No, that's not what I'm saying. You know, thanks so much for your question so I can clarify. I have used textbooks, and you have to see what works for your family. If you want to use a textbook with some lesson plans, perhaps, or an activity that goes, you know, activities that go with it, by all means, you know, whatever works best for your family. We ended up using a unit study because that worked best for my kids. They didn't want me to read to them and just have them answer questions. They didn't learn best that way. One of the complaints that my second oldest child, the same precocious child that was trying to stabilize hydrogen peroxide, she said that I didn't do enough testing with them. So that was her one complaint when she went to college. I didn't give her enough multiple choice tests. But so that probably would have come, you know, would have been a good thing if we had used textbooks. But just for our family, we used unit studies. I still do a lot of unit studies before we hit high school. And then because I do have college-bound kids, we tend to do textbooks for science. So, you know, that hopefully that answers your question. I just don't want you to say, you know, don't get textbooks at all. I just want you to be able to incorporate science labs. And for us, the tried and true labs are what I'm going to share with you next. And that's what is a good all-purpose lab. However, before I do that, I'm looking at my notes here, and I don't want to forget. I want to give you that code, and that is capital T, capital S, and it stands for Teaching Science. So capital T, capital S, 2014. And if you use that code in mediaangels.com for the Teaching Science and Having Fun book, the ebook, you will be able to receive that for $10 off. So, and if you want to go ahead and use that code for the printed book, you can as well, although that book is $16.95. So you would get $10 off of that book. Okay. Well, hopefully that answered the question, and I gave you the code so I didn't forget. And let's go on. What makes a good all-purpose lab? Let me just tell you, if you have things on hand, it's so much easier to do your experimentation. And I know that I was missing measuring spoons and measuring cups and funnels and things like that. So what I did was I bought four plastic bins. And in each of those bins, I put different types of lab equipment. So for the first one, I labeled an all-purpose lab. And what they were not very big. I wish I could tell you the dimensions, but whatever works for you. They were clear with white lids, and I just got them at the local, you know, convenience store. So not like convenience gas store, just your local store, whatever that is for you, okay? I'm really careful about mentioning brand names, but, you know, whatever is close to you and whatever you can find. So they were clear, small clear bins with plastic lids. And I would label on the outside all-purpose lab, basic chemistry lab, basic biology lab, and basic physical science lab. And then when they got older, basic physics lab. And I even had one for dissection. So the main one I want to give you today, and this, again, is in my book, Teaching Science and Having Fun. You can find that book on my website at mediaangels.com. Okay, so what makes a good lab? A large magnifying glass. I like eyedroppers because it always seems like we need them for experiments, or the little pipettes you can get. Coffee filter paper, I know that with the disposable little coffee dealies, they're harder to find, but I just went and bought some really cheap ones that I keep in our lab. At one time I used to have them on hand, and now I have one that's a permanent coffee filter, so I don't keep them on hand for coffee anymore. A good thermometer, and I have one that reads both Celsius and Fahrenheit, and that's important for scientific method. Scientific experiments tend to use the metric system, so that, again, Celsius is important, but then because we do live in the U.S., I like the Fahrenheit because it gives the kids a perspective of, you know, how hot it really is. Labels, a microscope. The one I recommended is no longer being built, but it was called the Blister Microscope, and if you can find that online, the Blister Microscope is probably one of the best compound microscopes I've ever found for the price. Small plastic containers, you can use little baggies if you want. A heat-proof glass container, I bought some that had a measuring scale on the side. A measuring cup, again, those that are heat-proof. You don't really want to use plastic ones. I bought some metal ones that the kids use. Measuring spoons. My kids had their own set, so they weren't taking mine. A kitchen scale. Again, these are things you can find pretty inexpensively. A funnel. And then some other measuring devices like a measuring tape, or a measuring, some sort of measuring tape that has metric as well, because sometimes that is hard to find. A sieve, again, something that seemed to be needed, and the kids would take mine, and then some sort of a timing device. So that just gives you an idea of household ingredients that you can put in your lab kit. And I have those for chemistry, physics, biology as well in my book. So, you know, moving on, what are some other things that you need for a tried and true science lab? And again, make what you have at home work for you as much as you possibly can. And also keep things on hand that are used just specifically for your labs, and that way it will cut down frustration. You know, I never would think of creating something, let's say I'm going to bake a cake or make a special type of recipe. And I never would think of doing that without having all the ingredients on hand. But I can't tell you how many times as a homeschool mom, I've pulled out an experiment book and expected to be able to create an experiment without preparing for that. I think that's one of the reasons that so many people dislike doing science experiments at home or labs at home. So if you're a little bit more prepared, that would be great. And then I just want to talk quickly about boxed lab kits. I remember having this idea that, you know, I was going to save some money because there was this kit I really wanted, and it was $250, and it had all of these great things in there. It was this one, you know, buy this, and everything's in here for you, and it's always tempting, isn't it, as homeschool parents? Well, I found that I could replicate that kit for about $50 when I really looked at what was in there. And one of the things that it had was a wooden test tube holder as well as some test tubes and that sort of thing. So I just looked online and I found some really good homeschool-friendly websites that sold things individually. You know, again, remember, I started homeschooling in 1986, so when I started, there weren't as many things as available. Now I'm sure if you just go online and you look up, wood test tube rack, there's probably 100 different places that sell them. You know, at the time there wasn't. So, you know, for under $50, I could put together something comparable to $100, $250 set. And then a lot of times these sets had, you know, 20 of something because they were geared for the classroom. So just be careful, look, you know, very carefully at what's being offered and then buy that. And I have to tell you, too, I've also had great success with those chemistry sets that you buy at your local store. You know, it's, again, basic chemistry, but it really gives the kids an understanding of what the chemicals are, mixing chemical compounds, and, again, going back to one of the first points I covered in this session, and that was vocabulary and the importance of that. All right, let's hit on number five, my least favorite thing. And, you know, I didn't start with my testimony in this talk as I have in the past, and that was that I hated science as a child, as an educator when I taught school, and then as a homeschool parent. But God in his infinite wisdom and mercy gave me children that love science, and so I really had to do an about face and embrace science as looking at it from the perspective of what God created, and then being amazed and then blown away as I started studying it more layer by layer. Well, dissections were something that I thought was better left to the professionals, or let's just do it online and look at a virtual dissection. But I found the importance of actually having the children do dissections. And again, you know, it's easy to say, you know, this is what the lens of an eye looks like, but it's different when you have a cow's eyeball and you're dissecting that and the kids can see, you know, how amazing the lens is. So, you know, while we don't have to, you know, explode the atomic bomb, God forbid, in order to understand what that is, in some instances, I consider it very important. You may not. You may think that virtual dissections will work for you and your family, and that's awesome. You know, it's one of the freedoms of being able to homeschool. So, you know, God bless whatever your decision is. But for us, dissections are very important. And I remember my children talking about that. They're doing biology right now. My daughter and son were part of a larger co-op, and I was teaching the high school biology class, so I wasn't doing the elementary biology. And they were able to watch an adult do some dissections, and it just isn't the same. So my daughter was really enthusiastic about doing them on her own with her brother now. And even though the two of them are doing the same book, I will get each of them their own dissection kit. You know, we have the instruments, but I'm talking about the actual animals. And one of the things for those of you who haven't done dissections at home or are thinking about your science labs, when I took science in high school, and we didn't do dissections in elementary school that I can remember, but when I did dissections, they were so smelly. And it just reeked, and now they have so improved the preservation method. So I just want to give you that for those of you that are considering dissections and, you know, hoping to do them at home and not be, you know, grossed out by what is available, you know, when you buy those. And they're also very affordable. So if you can only afford to get one set, do it with a group of people, you know, and have people pitch in. That's also an option, whatever, again, works for your family. Well, I'm going to go to questions right now and just see if we have any questions here from our audience. Okay. I do have a question here, and that is about the lab set. The question is, you went really fast, and I wasn't able to catch everything in your all-purpose kit. Can you repeat that? You know what? Because this is an audio, what I would have you do, because we are under a time constraint here, what I would have you do is just replay this audio and then just hit stop. And that way you can go through those again. These are not, you know, don't think of this as, okay, here are the 15 things she said. I have to have each one of these. I grew mine over the years. So when my kids needed a funnel, and I would just add that to the set. And I have to tell you, you know, pieces have gone from one lab box to the other through the years. And from time to time, we have to get all the boxes out and sort through them again because they don't always get put back in the right place. So the reason I came up with an all-purpose one is because when we need one of those things that are needed by every single, you know, kit, it seemed, I put it in that one all-purpose kit. So that's her second part of the question was clarification on why you need an all-purpose kit when you have a biology, physical science or physics lab, and then chemistry. So, you know, just some food for thought there of why I did it. Here's another question. Are virtual dissections bad? No, not at all. You can, you know, look those up. I know when my kids were younger, we would do a lot more on the Internet than we do now. And let me just give you a little bit of a clarification for that. I know that we are in an information overload age. If we see something we don't know, we just look it up online. And so as much as I possibly can, I gear my kids to books, not to say that we never do anything online or we don't look at virtual dissections. You know, we have in the past. But as much as I possibly can, I want to give them that hands-on experience because I know this is probably going to be one of the last times they get it. So, you know, that's just our family personal preference. So you, again, do what you want to do. You know, I know it's a cop-out to say, you know, this is what I do. You guys do what you want. But there really is not a one, you know, fit or a perfect fit to every family. And I've learned that through experience and through the years. When I would hear people say, you know, this is how we do it and you really have to do it this way, you know, and this is the right way. And I thought, gosh, that's not at all what I want to do. I had the freedom and the grace, I think, to be able to pull back and say, you know, this is what we're going to do for our family. So I try to do that when I teach or give advice, you know, to have that freedom to be able to use and do what works for your family. You know, this may be a season where, you know, maybe a dissection kit, and I want to say, I think they range from about $20, and you can even get individual critters for less than that. But, you know, $20 may be way out of your budget right now. And so a virtual dissection works for you. Perfect. You know, use that. On an off topic and on topic, one of my friends lived out in the country, and I remember her telling me she used roadkill for dissections. Now, that would totally gross me out, for one thing, and the second is I'm thinking, okay, so how many diseases does this critter have, and it's been run over. But she did it very successfully. She would freeze it, use gloves, have the kids put on little masks, and I just got a Christmas card from this friend, and she has just finished homeschooling her last child. And they've all been successful, and, you know, no one got any deadly disease from doing this. If you're that, and she did live on a farm, you know, so I will give her credit for that. So, you know, for some families, that's an option, you know, if it presents itself. For us, it just never was. You know, we don't come from a hunting family. It's not something my husband did, his father did. And one of my sons would love to be a hunter and wished his father was but isn't. And so, you know, you have to look at your family and what works for you and, you know, what your children's focus is. And that's the other thing, you know, for our academics, we tend to look at things and say, okay, this is required for this year. And while that's great, and I even have an outline in my Teaching Science and Having book of the science that should be covered for every year, you don't have to be married to those outlines. Okay, give yourself, again, some grace just to sit back and say, what are my goals for my children and how do I want to accomplish and teach my kids to not only get through their school years with what is required, quote unquote, but also what is required for their future and what I want for them. And that's one of the reasons that I love science and really found that my kids have a logical way of thinking because they've done so much with the realm of science or in the realm of science. Well, thank you so much. I don't see any other questions here. So thank you so much for coming and joining us today. I really appreciate it. And I hope you join us again next week. We'll have some exciting guests. And don't forget to use that code. It's TS, capital T, capital S, 2014 at MediaAngels.com for $10 off the ebook. All right. Thanks and God bless.
Thanks for tuning in to the Vintage Homeschool Mom Show. Visit Felice at MediaAngels.com and TheVintageHomeschoolMoms.com. Vintage Homeschool Moms is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network.